realities, and perhaps the world is not as empty as we think we have made it.
Father, Kelavra sent you away because she will not resist the sundering of the gate.
Udinas looked away.
I suspected something like that.
She has already given up.
Rude, I think it was her desire all along. In fact, I do not think Kettle's mortal wounding came from the other side of Starveld, Demolaine. The Azath was young, yes, but strong. And with the finest of Scabandari, well, do you remember our confidence? But then suddenly something changed.
Riad thought about that and felt a surge of anger building within him. That was wrong, he said.
She pushed the Imas back into the world of the living.
That was a living world.
It was a dream, doomed to go round and round and never change. In the eyes of nature, it was an abomination. But listen, Rude,
and he leaned forward.
Onrak loves her still. Do nothing rash. Leave her be.
And if you all die? If the Imas are discovered and then hunted down?
Trust in Seren Pedak. She will find a place for us. Rude, stay away from the dragons. When they come, stay as far away from them as you can.
Silchas so warned me, Father.
Is he with you?
No. Udinas nodded.
I'm not very free with my trust, but he did as he promised. I will give him that. Still, I'm glad he's gone.
Father, Seren Pedak must protect her child. He's in great danger. Offer her the protection of the Imas.
Udinas lifted his brows.
That just might work. Good thinking there.
Not me, Father. Silchas ruin.
You begin to fade from my eyes, Rude.
I grow weary.
Be safe. I look.
And then he was gone. Riad blinked his eyes clear, stared round at the grim cave walls.
A place to hide, he whispered. It's all we ask. It's what we all would ask. Had we the voice, just leave us alone.
She means to kill us,
Stavi said, with eyes that did not belong to a young girl.
Me and Story. She only wants Apsi.
The dusk was drawing its shroud. Torrent had found some Bedouin dung, years old, and they huddled around the flickering flames. He watched the strange flashes of colour coming from the crystal shard Apsi was playing with.
She won't, he assured the twins. She means to use you to bend your father to her will.
She only needs Apsi for that,
said Story.
She'll kill one of us first to get his attention, and then the other to leave him with only his son, and then our father will kneel before her. He will surrender.
You're thinking too much, both of you. We're still a long way from anything happening.
You're wrong,
Stavi said.
It's much closer than you think, Torrent.
To that he had nothing to say.
Even my lies fail me.
He threw another chip onto the fire.
Wrap up now in each other's arms. Apsi, go to your sisters. This night will be a cold one.
She took us north.
Yes, Stavi.
Why?
I don't know. We couldn't cross that desert.
He looked around.
This might be a hold for all I know. I do not recognize the stars, and those jade spears are gone.
A warren,
said Story with some impatience.
We already knew that. But still she took us north.
Go to sleep, all of you.
When the three children settled down, Torrent threw the one fur skin they possessed over them, and then rose to stretch his legs and back. Glancing over at the witch, huddled 15 paces away, he was reminded of a corpse he'd once found, one of the old women of the village, who'd walked out in the winter cold to find a place to die in solitude. A few of the old ones still did such things, though for most the custom had faded. A withered creature rising from the spring thaw's deep snows, kneeling in the fold of a hillside. Maybe it wasn't a bad way to die. alone, freezing until all feeling went away, and then sleep, offering one last warm sigh. The winds had torn her up, he recalled, and ice shards had broken through her skin from the inside, and the crows had found her eyes, lips and ears, and what was left. Olar Ethel lifted her head, regarded him across the distance. Torrent turned away.
Do not wander too far, she warned behind him. In this warren it is easy to get lost, and I will not go looking for you.
Because we're almost there, aren't we?
If you choose to run away, pup, do not think I will take you back.
He set out with no intention of going too far. Don't leave us, they begged. I won't, promise. 10 paces on, he glanced back. Spirits below! The camp had vanished. Now nothing but flat tundra, stretching away into the darkness. Then he caught a glimmer. The fire. I was just looking in the wrong direction. Torrent ran towards it. Halfway there, he slowed and then halted. Too far away. I never walked this far. I barely walked at all. But he could see a figure seated before the feeble flames. Shivering, Torrent slowly approached. Olar Ethel, is that you? No, not unless you've been hiding that red waistcoat. The man was reaching into one voluminous sleeve, drawing forth silver wine cups, a large decanter, and then a host of candied fruit and baked desserts. I am dreaming, all of this. I am sleeping close to the children right now, and my moans are heard by none but the hag. The man looked up. His face was round, softened by years of indolence, a city dweller's face. He gestured with a plump hand.
Quickly, crupper gestures, see? There is little time. Come, sit, before crupper awakens to a miserable and fraught dawn in his beleaguered city. You are the keeper of my daughters?
What?
Crapper would be there if he could. Ah! It is ever our excuse, and paltry and pathetic it is. But then Crapper is famous for his energetic seed. Why, it has been known to swim a league upriver to impregnate a baron's pretty daughter not 3 months before her scandalous marriage. Well, the marriage proved scandalous 6 months later anyway, and how that husband was castigated and indeed disowned. Now, if he'd been as adventurous as she would have liked, why, Crapper's seed would have come to the door only to find it barred, yes? So the husband got all that he deserved, or so Judge Crapper pronounces.
Your daughters, spirits take me. I see the resemblance. The eyes, the gestures with the hands. But Hetan, delicious Hetan, memories return in a stew of desire and alarm. No matter. Grievous the fate of their mother, perilous the fate of her children, and we must do something about that. Why are you not eating, drinking? Baruch's finest fare.
Torrent pointed.
They vanished. Oh my, the dread curse of unmindfulness. Perhaps next time, my barbarian friend. But time, it grows short, but Crapper is shorter still.
He fluttered a hand.
Tell me, what do you now see there?
Torrent squinted.
A bow, quiver, arrows.
Rivi, to this day they yearly ply me with useless gifts, for reasons that, while obscure, are no doubt well deserved. In any case, I give them all away as a measure of my extraordinary generosity. Are these not finer weapons than the ones you now possess?
My bow split. I had nothing with which to repair it. The arrow shafts have dried and warped. I'd intended to harden them one last time, but forgot. The fletching...
Before you go on, good sir, by your list, Crapper can conclude that, yes, indeed, this Rivi offering is superior to that which you now possess.
I just said that.
Did you? Excellent. Take them and be off with you, quickly. Let it never be said that Crapper is a neglectful father, no matter what that baron's daughter later claimed in court. and if Crupper had not dramatically revealed that she was now sleeping with her advocate, why, Crupper would be a much thinner man than the one you now see fading before you, red waistcoat and all. Wait, I'm lost. She said, "Behind you, O wily scout."
New weapons in hand, Torrance slowly turned to see 20 paces away the dying fire, the children knotted up beneath the fir, and Olar Ithil slumped on the far side. He swung back to thank the man, but he was gone, and with him his modest hearth. He lifted the weapons for a closer look.
"These are from no dream. These are real and finely made."
He set the string and tested the draw.
"Spirits! These Rivi must be giants."
Olar Ithil barely stirred when he returned to the fire.
"Changed your mind, did you?"
Torrance set the bow and quiver down beside him.
"Yes," he said.
"Just as well, pup. Warrens are dangerous places for fools such as you. If you would honour the vow you made, you would do well to stay close to me."
Torrance tossed the last chip of dung into the fire, watched sparks lift into the night.
"I shall, Bonecaster."
Her head settled once more. He stared across at her.
"When sleep offers its final sigh, old hag, I'll be there to wake you."
Absey rolled over in his sleep and in a soft sing-song voice said,
"Cra-la-la-la-la, yep."
But Torrance could see that his eyes were closed, and on his face there was a contented smile. The child licked his lips.
"Saved them for him, did you, Crupper? Well done."
Onos Tulan halted, slowly turned. Limned in jade light, 1,000 Tlani Mas stood facing him.
"So many, and swirling there, the dust of hundreds more, strangers, summoned by the unveiling of Telan. Is this what I want? Is this what I need?"
All at once he felt the weight of their attention, fixed so remorselessly upon him, and almost buckled.
"Needs, wants, they are irrelevant. This is what I will, and by that power alone a world can be destroyed, or shaped anew."
He slowly straightened, restored by the thought and the strength that came with it.
"When I am done, dust shall be dust, nothing more. Not a thing alive with secrets, or thick with grief and horror, simply dust. Do you understand me?"
"We do, First Sword."
"I will free you."
"Not yet, First Sword."
"I would walk alone."
"Then you shall."
His army fell in cascading clouds, save two figures that had been standing well back in the Tlan Legion. Onos considered them for a time and then beckoned. They approached, and the female spoke.
"First Sword, I once walked these lands, yet I did not."
"You are named Ristal Ev."
"Yes."
"Your words make no sense."
She shrugged, pointed northward.
"There, something troubling."
"Olar Ithil."
"No, First Sword. This is closer."
"You are curious, Ristal Ev?"
The warrior beside her, Ulag Togtil, spoke.
"There are lost memories within her, First Sword. Perhaps they were taken from other Ymas, from those who once lived here. Perhaps they are her own. That which will be found to the north, it is like the awakening of an old wound, but one she cannot see, only feel."
"What you seek," Ristal Ev said to Onos, "is threatened, or so I fear, but I cannot be certain."
Onos Tulan studied the two of them.
"You resist me well, and I see the strength you find in each other. It is strange." "First Sword," said Ulag, "it is love."
Onos was silent, struggling to comprehend the warrior's statement.
"We did not discover it from within ourselves," Ristal Ev said. "We found it
like a stone in a stream," Ulag said. "Bright, wondrous."
"In the stream, First Sword,
of your thoughts.
When the mountains thunder and the ice in the high passes at last shatters to spring's warmth, Ulag lifted a withered hand, let it fall again. The stream becomes a torrent, sweeping all down with it. Cruel flood, and yet a stone glimmering.
This is not possible, said Onos Tulan. There is no such thing within me. The fires of Telan have burned hollow my soul. You delude yourselves, each other.
Ristal Ev shrugged.
Delusions of comfort. Are these not the gifts of love, First Sword?
Onos regarded the female.
Go then, the two of you. Find this threat. Determine its nature, and then return.
Ulag spoke.
You ask nothing more of us, First Sword?
Ristal Ev, does it hunt us?
No, First Sword, I think not. It simply is.
Find this memory of yours, Ristal Ev. If it is indeed a threat to me, then I shall destroy it.
Onos Tulan watched the two Tlani Mas trudge northward. The First Sword had drawn the power of Telan close, protective. Wearying of Olar Ethil's assaults, he had made it an impenetrable wall. But there was risk to this. The wall left him blind to all that lay beyond it.
Threats to what I seek, to the fate I desire for us. Olar Ethil stands alone against me. I can think of no one else. After all, I do not flee destruction, but strive to meet it, to find it in the place of my choosing. Who would deny me that? Ristal Ev, memories are powerless. Did the ritual not teach us this? Find what troubles you, then come back. Ulag Togtil, in your language of flowers, I would know more of this glimmering stone, this wondrous impossibility.
He resumed his walk, now alone on the ravaged plain, sword tips striking sparks from stones lying embedded in the ground. In his wake, a building wall of dust, alive with secrets, thick with grief and horror, rising higher. Ristal Ev glanced back, watched the First Sword making his solitary way eastward, the dust seething behind him.
He does not know, does he?
He is closed too much within himself, Ulag Togtil said.
See the cloud. We began as only a few hundred. We left 1,000 to march behind him, as he demanded. But he has awakened Telan. He has summoned.
How many now, Ristal Ev?
5,000? 10?
That wall, Ristal Ev, it is vast.
Yes.
She whispered. Another moment passed, and then they turned and set off northward. The mists cleared, and Gruntal found himself padding through fresh snow. 1,000 paces to his left, 2 splintered masts jutted from a white mound, the wind-blown snow heaped in a high dune around the wreckage of a ship. Directly ahead, rocky outcroppings marked the foot of a range of cliffs split by narrow gorges. At the flat foot of the outcroppings, a scattering of skeletal hut frames crouched in the lee of the cliffs. The breath of raw magic was heavy in the air. There was an answering thunder in his chest, and he could feel the warrior souls within him gathering close, awakening their power. He drew closer. Hearing a coughing grunt, he halted and tensed upon seeing 2 thick-shouldered cats emerge from a cave. Their hide was banded grey and black, like shadows on stone. Their upper canines reached down past their lower jaws. The beasts eyed him, small ears flattening back against their broad skulls, but made no other move. Gruntal stretched his jaws in a yawn. Just beyond the huts, a rockfall had made a crevasse into a cave, and from that dark mouth drifted unsettling emanations. Fixing his eyes upon that passage, he padded forward. The 2 saber-toothed cats loped towards him.
Not soul-taken, not diverse. These are true beasts, hunters, but they look hungry.
At the cave mouth, Gruntle hesitated, glancing back as the big cats approached.
Are you that fearless? What do you want with me?
Having drawn closer until flanked by the hooped frames of two huts, the cats halted, the one on the left sitting down on its haunches and then flopping onto the thin snow and rolling onto its back. Tension eased from Gruntle.
Hungry for company?
He faced the cave once more and then slipped into the darkness. Instead of bitter cold, he felt heat, gusting damp and fetid from further within.
She is here. She is waiting for me. Oh, how I have waited for this moment. Trake, I never asked for this. I never asked for you. And when you chose me, I told you again and again it was a mistake. Stonny, if you could see me now, you'd understand. You'd know the why of all of this. I can almost see it, that one quick nod to tell me it's all right. I won't be coming back, but it's all right. We both know there are some places you can't come back from. Not ever.
He considered Sembling and then decided against it. She would meet him as she chose, but he was Trake's mortal sword, at least on this day. A voice whispered inside him, distant, hollow, commanding him to turn round, to flee this place, but he ignored it. The crevasse narrowed, twisting before opening out into a vast domed cavern. She stood facing him, a squat, muscular woman cloaked in the fur of a panther, but otherwise naked. Her hooded eyes held glints of gold, her round face was framed in thick, long black hair. Her broad, full-lipped mouth was set, unwelcoming. Behind her, on a cracked hump of stone, was the ruin of a house. Walls had caved in, and it seemed that an ancient tree had grown up from beneath the structure, shattering the foundations, but the tree was now dead. Sorrow drifted down from the broken edifice, bitter to Gruntle's senses. Above it, just under the dome, steam roiled, the clouds lit from behind, as if the cavern's roof was glowing, hot enough to melt the stone. Staring up at this manifestation, Gruntle felt on the verge of falling upward, pulled into a realm unimaginably vast.
Vast, yes, but not empty.
She spoke in his mind, that now familiar, deep, liquid voice.
Stavall de Demelaine, mortal sword, now commanding this place, transforming the very stone itself. No other gate remains. As for you, is this your god's panic? You should not be here. Tell him, mortal sword, tell my child, I will not permit your interference.
Your child? You claim to be Trake's mother, do you?
He sensed a flash of irritation.
First swords, first empire, first heroes. We were a people proud of such things, for all the good it did us. I have birthed many children. Most of them are now dead.
So is Trake.
First heroes were chosen, mortal sword, to become gods, and so escape death. All that he surrendered that day on the plains of Lammertoth was his mortal flesh. But like any god, he cannot risk becoming manifest, and so he created you. His mortal sword, the weapon of his will.
Remind me to thank him for that.
You must stand aside here, she said. The Elaint are coming. If you seek to oppose them, you will die, mortal sword.
No, what you fear is that I shall succeed.
I will not permit that.
Then it is you and I who shall fight in this cavern, as I have seen in my dreams.
Dreams? You fool. I was trying to warn you.
Black fur, blood, a dying breath. Woman, these were not your sendings.
There is little time left. Gruntle, do not challenge this.
She lifted her arms out to the sides. Look at me. I am Kelava Onas, a bone caster of the Imas. I defied the ritual of Telan, and my power beggars that of your human gods. What will occur here, not even I can prevent. Do you understand me? It is necessary. He had expected such words, but still his hackles rose.
It's what we always hear, isn't it? From generals and warlords and miserable tyrants, justifying yet another nightmare epoch of slaughter, of suffering, misery, and despair. And what do we all do? We duck down and weather it. We tell ourselves that this is how it must be. I stood on the roof of a building, and all around me people were dying. And by my hand, gods, that building wept blood. For what? They all died. The whole fucking city. All those people. They just died anyway. I told Drake he chose wrongly. I was never a soldier. I despise war. I detest all the sordid lies about glory and honor. You, Kelava, if you have lived as long as you say you have, if Drake is your get, then you have seen a child of yours kneel to war, as if war itself was a damned god. But still, you want him to live. You want your child god, your first fucking hero, to go on and on. Wars without end. And the sword shall swing down and they shall fall forevermore.
Grantle, why are you here?
He advanced, feeling the blood within him rise to a boil.
Haven't you guessed? I'm going to fight. I'm going to bring your son down, here and now. I'm going to kill the bastard. An end to the god of slaughter, of horror, of rape.
Kelava howled in sudden rage, vanished inside a blur of darkness. Veered into a panther as huge as Gruntle himself, she coiled to spring. In his mind, he saw a single quick nod.
Yes.
Baring his fangs, Gruntle lunged to meet her. Far to the northeast, something glittered. Mappo stood studying it for a long time as the sun swelled the horizon behind him and then slunk, red and sullen, down past the edge of the world. That distant flashing fire held on for a while longer, like burning hills. He drew the water skin from his sack, drank deep, and then crouched down to probe his lacerated feet. The soles of the boots had been torn away by the fierce assault of crystal shards. Since noon, he had been trailing blood, each smear vanishing beneath a frenzied clump of cape moths as if flowers sprang from his every footprint.
Such is the gift of life in this tortured place.
He drew a deep breath. The muscles of his legs were like clenched fists beneath him. He could not push on for much longer, not without a full night of rest.
But time is running out.
Mappo drank once more and then stored the water skin. Shouldering the pack, he set off, northeast. The jade spears slashed a path into the night sky, and green light bled down, transforming the desert floor into a luminescent sea. As he jogged, Mappo imagined himself crossing the basin of an ocean. The bitter cold air filled his lungs, biting like ice with each indrawn breath. From this place, he knew he would never surface. The thought disturbed him, and with a growl he cast it from his mind. As he ran, shooting stars raced and flared overhead, growing into an emerald storm, crisscrossing the heavens. He thought that if he listened carefully enough, he might hear them, hissing like steam as they skipped, and then igniting with a crack of thunder once they began their final descent. But the rasping was only his own breath, the thunder nothing but the drum of his own heart. The sky stayed silent, and the burning arrows remained far, far away. The sorrow in his soul had begun to taste sour. Aged and dissolute, moments from crumbling. He did not know what would come in its wake. Resignation, as might find a fatally ill man in his last days, or just an exultant eagerness to see it all end. At the moment, even despair seemed too much effort. He drew closer, eyes fixing on what seemed a range of tall crystals, green as glacial ice, rising to command the scene ahead. His exhausted mind struggled to make sense of it.
Something. Order. A pattern. Oh, gods, I've seen its like before. In stone. Icarium. Immortal architect, builder of monuments, you set out to challenge the gods, to defy the weavers of time. Maker of what cannot die, but with each edifice you raise the things that you need the most, the memories the rest of us guard so zealously, and they arrive stillborn in your hands, each one as dead as the one before. And look at us. We who would pray to forget so much, our regrets, our foolish choices, the hurts we delivered over a lifetime, we think nothing of this gift, this freedom we see as a cage, and in our rattling fury we wish that we were just like you. Raiser of empty buildings, visionary of silent cities.
But how many times could he remind Icarium of friendship, the precious comfort of familiar company? How many times could he fill once more all those empty rooms?
My friend, my bottomless well. But should I tell you the truth, then you would take your own life. Is that so bad a thing? With all that you have done, is it? And now you are threatened and helpless. I feel this. I know it is truth. I fear that you will be awakened in all your rage, and that this time there will be more than just humans within reach of your sword. This time there will be gods. Someone wants you, Icarium, to be their weapon. But if I reach you first, I could awaken you to who you are. I could speak the truth of your history, friend, and when you set the point of the dagger to your chest, I could stand back, do nothing. I could honor you with the one thing I still had, myself. I could be the witness to your one act of justice. I could talk you into killing yourself. Is it possible that this is where friendship can take us? What would I do then? I would bury you and weep over the stones for my loss, as friends will do.
The city was his genius. Mappo could see that truth in every line. But as he drew closer, squinting at the strangely flowing light and shadows in the facets of crystal, he saw evidence of occupation. His step slowed. Broken husks of fruit, fragments of clothing, the musty smell of dried feces. The sun was beginning to rise. Had it been that far? He approached the nearest, broadest avenue. As he passed between two angular buildings, he froze at a flicker of movement. There, reflected from a facet projecting from the wall to his right, and as he stared, he saw it again.
Children walking past. Yet no one was here. No one but me.
They were wending their way out of the city, hundreds upon hundreds of children, stick-thin limbs and bellies swollen with starvation. As he watched the procession, he saw not a single adult among them. Mappo walked on, catching glimpses in the crystals of their brief occupation, their squatting presence amidst palatial, if cold, splendor.
Icarium, I begin to understand. And yet, cruelest joke of all, this was the one place you could never find again. Every time you said you felt close, this city was the place you sought. These crystal machines of memory, and the trail you hunted. It did not matter if we were on another continent. It did not matter if we were half a world away. That trail was one of remembering. Remembering this city.
He went on, piecing together the more recent history, the army of children, and many times he caught sight of one girl, her mouth crusted with sores, her hair bleached of all color, and huge eyes that seemed to somehow find his own. But that was impossible. She was long gone, with all the other children. She could not be...
Ah, this is the one. voicing songs of incantation, the banisher of the diverse. Opals, gems, shards, this is the child.
He had come to a central square. She was there, looking out at him from a tilted spire of quartz. He walked until he stood in front of her, and her eyes tracked him all the way.
You are just a memory, Meppo said. It is a function of the machine to trap the life passing through it. You cannot be looking at me. No, someone has walked my path. Someone has come to stand before you here.
He swung round. 15 paces away, before the sealed door of a narrow structure, Meppo saw a boy, tall, clutching a bundled shape. Their eyes met.
I am between them, that is all. They do not see me, they see each other.
But the boy's eyes pinned him like knife points, and he spoke.
Do not turn away.
Meppo staggered as if struck. Behind him the girl said,
Icarius cannot hold us. The city is troubled.
He faced her again. A boy had come up beside her, in his scrawny arms a heap of rubbish. He studied the girl's profile with open adoration. She blew flies from her lips.
Badal,
the tall boy's voice drifted past him.
What did you dream?
The girl smiled.
No one wants us, Rut. Not one. In their lives they won't change a thing to help us. In their lives they make ever more of us. But when they say they care about our future, they're lying. The words are empty, powerless. But I have seen words of real power, Rut, and each one is a weapon, a weapon. That is why adults spend a lifetime blunting them.
She shrugged.
No one likes getting cut.
When the boy spoke again, it was as if he stood in Mappo's place.
What did you dream, Badal? In the end, we take our language with us. In the end, we leave them all behind.
She turned to the boy beside her and frowned.
Throw them away. I don't like them.
The boy shook his head.
What did you dream, Badal?
The girl's gaze returned, centering on Mappo's face.
I saw a tiger. I saw an ogre. I saw men and women. Then a witch came and took their children away, and not one of them tried to stop her.
It wasn't like that, Meppo whispered, but it was.
Then one rode after them. He wasn't much older than you, Rut, I think. He was hard to see. A ghost got in the way. He was young enough to still listen to his conscience.
It wasn't like that.
Is that all?
Asked the boy named Rut.
No,
she replied.
But he's heard enough.
Meppo cried out, staggered back, away. He shot a look back and saw her eyes tracking him. And in his skull, she said,
Ogre, I can't save you, and you can't save him. Not from himself. He is your held, but every child wakes up. In this world, every child wakes up, and it is what all of you fear the most. Look at Rut. He has held in his arms. And you go to find your held, to fill your arms once more. Look at Rut. He is terrified of held waking up. He's just like you. Now hear my poem. It is for you. She made you choose which child to save, and you chose one to save, the others to surrender. It is not an easy choice, but you make it every day. That is not an easy truth, but the truth is every day. One of us, among those you walk away from, dies. And there are more truths in this world than I can count. But each time you walk away, the memory remains. And no matter how far or fast you run, the memory remains.
Meppo spun, fled the square. Echoes pursued him, carrying her voice.
In Icarius, memory remains. In Icarius waits the tomb of all that is forgotten. Where memory remains, where he would have found his truth. Do you choose to save him now, Ogre? Do you choose to bring him to his city? When he opens his own tomb, what will he find? What do any of us find? Will you dare map your life, Ogre, by each dead child left in your wake? You see, I dreamed a dream I cannot tell Rut, because I love him. I dreamed of a tomb, Ogre, filled with every dead child. It seems, then, that we are all builders of monuments.
Shrieking, Mappo ran, and ran, leaving a trail of bloody footprints, and on all sides his reflection, forever trapped.
Because the memory remains.
Will you ever tire, Setch, of gloom and doom?
Setchul Lath glanced across at Erastus.
I will, the moment you tire of all that blood on your hands.
Erastus snarled.
And is it your task to ever remind me of it?
To be honest, I don't know. I suppose I could carve out my own eyes and then bless my newfound blindness.
Do you now mock my wound?
No, forgive me. I was thinking of the poet who one day decided he'd seen too much.
Behind them, Kilmandaros asked,
And did his self-mutilation change the world?
Irrevocably, Mother.
How so?
She asked.
Eyes can be hard as armor. They can be hardened to see yet feel nothing if the will is strong enough. You've seen such eyes, Mother. You as well, Erastus. They lie flat in the sockets like stone walls. They are capable of witnessing any and every atrocity. Nothing gets in, nothing gets out. Now, that poet, he removed those stones, tore away the veil permanently. So what was inside? Well, it all poured out.
But being blinded, nothing that was outside could find a way in.
Indeed, Mother. But by then it was too late. It had to be, if you think about it.
So it poured out, grumbled Erastus. Then what?
I'd hazard it changed the world.
Not for the better, Kilmandaros muttered.
I have no burning need, Erastus, said Setchul Lath, to cure the ills of the world, this one or any other.
Yet you observe critically.
If all honest observation ends up sounding critical, is it the honesty you then reject or the act of observation?
Why not both?
Indeed, why not both? Abyss knows it's easier that way.
Why do you bother, then?
Erastus, I am left with two choices. I could weep for a reason or weep for no reason. In the latter, we find madness.
And is the former any different?
Kilmandaros asked.
Yes. A part of me chooses to believe that if I weep long enough, I'll weep myself out. And then in the ashes, in the aftermath, will be born something else.
Like what?
Erastus demanded. Setchul Lath shrugged.
Hope.
See this hole in my face, Knuckles. I too weep, but my tears are blood.
My friend, at last you have become the true god of all the living worlds. When you finally stand at the very pinnacle of all creation, we shall raise statues marking your holy wounding, symbol of life's ceaseless suffering.
This I will accept, so long as the blood leaking down my face isn't my own.
Kilmandaros grunted.
No doubt your worshippers will be happy to bleed for you, Erastus, until the abyss swallows us all. And I shall possess a thirst to match their generosity.
But
Kilmandaros's hand suddenly gripped Setrul's shoulder and spun him round.
Friends, she said in a rumble, it is time.
They faced the way they had come. From the ridge where they stood, the basin to the west stretched out flat, studded with rocks and tufts of wiry grass, for as far as they could see. But now, under the mid-morning light, the vista had begun to change. Spreading in a vast, curved shadow, the ground was bleaching, all color draining away. from grey to white, until it seemed that the entire basin was a thing of bone and ash. And in the distance, at the very centre of this blight, the earth had begun to rise.
"She awakens," said Kilmandaros.
"And now," whispered Erastus,
his lone eyes glittering bright,
"we shall speak of dragons."
A hill where no hill had been before, lifting to command the horizon, bulging, swelling, a mountain. They saw it explode, a billowing eruption of earth and stone. Huge cracks ripped across the basin floor. The entire ridge rippled under them, and all three elder gods staggered. As the column of dust and ashes rose skyward, as the cloud opened like a mushroom to fill half the sky, the sound finally reached them, solid as a rushing wall, igniting stunning agony inside their skulls. Sir Chul and Erastus were battered to the ground, sent tumbling. Even Kilmandaros was thrown from her feet. Sir Chul stared across at her, saw her mouth opened wide in a terrible scream that he could not hear amidst the howling wind, the crushing thunder of that eruption. Twisting round, he stared at the vast roiling cloud.
"Carabas, you are returned to the world."
Within the maelstrom, spinning vortices of dirt, dust and smoke had begun to form. He watched them coil, pushed out to the sides as if buffeted by some unseen column of rising air at the very centre. Sir Chul frowned.
"Her wings? Are those made by her wings? Elder blood!"
As the roar died away, Sir Chul Lath heard Erastus, laughing.
"Mother?"
Kilmandaros was climbing to her feet. She glanced across at her son.
"Carabas otataral iraselent. Otataral, Sir Chul, is not a thing. It is a title."
She turned to Erastus.
"Errant, do you know its meaning?"
The one-eyed elder god's laughter slowly died. He looked away.
"What do I care for ancient titles?" he muttered.
"Mother?"
She faced the terrible blight of earth and sky to the west.
"Otastaral. In every storm there is an eye, a place of stillness. Otastaral means the eye of abnegation. And now, upon the world, we have birthed a storm."
Sir Chul Lath sank back down, covered his face with dust-stained hands.
"Will I ever tire? Yes, I have. See what we have unleashed. See what we have begun."
Erastus staggered close, falling to his knees beside Sir Chul, who looked up into that ravaged face and saw both manic glee and brittle terror. The errant smiled a ghastly smile.
"Do you see, Setch? They have to stop her. They have no choice."
"Yes, please, stop her."
"She has begun to move,"
Kilmandaros announced. Sir Chul pushed Erastus to one side and sat up, but the sky revealed nothing. Too much dust, too much smoke and ash. The pall had devoured two-thirds of the heavens, and the last third looked sickly, as if in retreat. The unnatural gloom was settling fast.
"Where?" he demanded.
His mother pointed.
"Track her by the ground, for now it is all we can do."
Sir Chul Lath stood.
"There,"
she said. A broad swath of bleached death stretching in a line.
"Northeast,"
he whispered, watching the slow, devastating blight cutting its slash across the landscape.
"All that lies beneath her."
"Where she passes," said Kilmandaros, "no life shall ever return. The stillness of matter becomes absolute. She is the eye of abnegation, the storm's center, where all must die."
"Mother, we have gone too far. This time, it's too late," shrieked Erastus. "She is the heart of sorcery. Without the eye of abnegation, there can be no magic."
"What?"
But Kilmandaros was shaking her head.
"It is not as simple as that."
"What isn't?"
Sir Chul demanded.
"Now that she is freed," she said, "the Elaint must kill her. They have no choice. Their power is magical, and Carabas will kill all that magic depends on. And since she is immune to their sorcery, it must be by fang and claw, and that will demand every alaint, every storm, until Tiam herself is awakened. And as for Carol, well, he can no longer refuse the errant summons. He was the one who harnessed the chaos of the dragons in the first place.
They have to kill her,
cried Erastus. The blood leaking from his eye was now black with dust. Kilmandaros grunted noncommittally.
If they truly kill her, Erastus, then the storm dies.
She faced him. But you knew this, or at least guessed the truth. What you seek is the death of all sorcery bound to laws of control. You seek to create a realm where no mortal can hurt you ever again. A realm where the blood is sacrificed in our name, but in truth we have no power to intervene, even if we wanted to. You desire worship, Erastus, but one where you need give nothing in return. Have I guessed right?
Sechul Lath shook his head. They cannot kill her,
Erastus wheeled on him.
But they must. I told you, I will see them all destroyed. The meddling gods, I want our children dead.
Carol will understand. He will see that there's no other way, no way to end this venal, pathetic tragedy. He stabbed a finger at Sechul.
You thought this was a game, cheating with the knuckles and then a wink to the mole? I summoned the elder gods. Kurul thinks to ignore me? No, I have forced his hand.
He suddenly cackled, his fingers twitching.
She is a blood clot let loose in his veins, and she will find his brain and he will die. I am the master of the holds, and I will not be ignored.
Sechul Lath staggered back from Erastus.
They chained her the first time, he said, because killing her was not an option. Not if they wanted to keep the Warrens alive.
He whirled on Kilmandaros.
Mother, did...
She turned away.
I grew tired of this, she said. Tired? But the heart of the crippled god,
Erastus spat.
What do we care about that dried-up slab of meat? He'll be as dead as the rest of them by the time this is done. So will the Fokrel Asael, and all the rest who'd think to challenge me. You didn't believe me, Sech. You chose to not take me seriously, again.
Sechul Lath shook his head.
I understand you now. Your real enemy is the master of the deck of dragons. Dragons who are Warrens, all that new, raw power. But you knew that you could not hope to match that master, not so long as the gods and Warrens remained dominant. So you devised a plan to kill it all. The deck, the sorcery of the dragons, the master, the gods. But what makes you think that the holds will somehow prove immune to the Eye of Abnegation? Because the holds are elder, you fool. It was Carol's bartering with the Elaint that made this whole mess, that brought the Warrens into the realms, that forced order upon the chaos of the old magic. Carol's conniving that saw one dragon selected among the Grand Clan, chosen to become the Negator, the Otataral, while all the others would chain themselves to aspects of magic. They brought law to sorcery, and now I will shatter that law forevermore. Carol sought peace. He sought to trump us, and so he did. But that ends today. Today! Sechul Lath, did you not agree to end it all? By your words, you agreed. I wasn't serious. I'm never serious. That's my curse. So, Erastus, if you will not seek the heart of the crippled god, where will you go now? That is my business,
he snapped, turning to study the bleached scar crossing the land.
Far away.
He faced Sechul again.
Mael finally comprehends what we have done here. But tell me, do you see him? Does he charge towards us now in all his fury? He does not. And our daughter? Know that she too now schemes anew, as does Olaresil. The elders once more approach ascension, a return to rule. There is much to be done.
The errant set off then, southward.
He flees.
Setchul turned to Kilmandaris.
I see my path now, mother, from this moment onward. Shall I describe it for you? I see myself wandering, lost and alone, with only a growing madness for company. It is a vision. I see it clear as day. Well,
and his laugh was dry,
every pantheon needs a fool, drooling and wild-eyed.
My son, she said, it is only a plan.
Excuse me, what?
The errant. What we have unleashed here cannot be controlled. Now, more than ever, the future is unknown, no matter what he chooses to believe.
Can she be chained again, mother?
She shrugged.
Anomanda Rake is dead. The other Elaine too partook of the chaining. They too are now dead.
Carol!
She is loose within him. He can do nothing. The Elaine who come will fight her. They will seek to take her down, but Carabas has long ago surrendered her sanity, and she will fight them to the bitter end. I expect most will die.
Mother, please!
Kilmandaros sighed.
You will not stay with me, my son?
To witness your meeting with Draconis? I think not.
She nodded.
Draconis will kill you!
She faced him with burning eyes.
It was only a plan, my beloved son.
Book 6. To One in Chains. If you knew where this path led, would you have walked it? If you knew the pain at love's solemn end, would you have awakened it? In darkness the wheel turns, in darkness the dust dims, in red fire the wheel burns, in darkness the sun spins. If you knew the thought in your head, would you have spoken it? If by this one word you betrayed a friend, would you have uttered it? In darkness the wheel turns, in darkness the dust dims, in red fire the wheel burns, in darkness the sun spins. If you knew the face of the dead, would you have touched it? If by this coin a soul's journey to send, would you have stolen it? In darkness the wheel turns, in darkness the dust dims, in red fire the wheel burns, in darkness the sun spins. Sparak Chant, Psalm 7, The Vulture's Laugh, the Sparak Nethem. Chapter 17. The faces all in rows will wait as I take each in my hands, remembering what it is to be who I am not. Will all these struggles fade into white, or melt like snow on stone in the heat of dawn? Do you feel my hands? These weathered wings of dreams of flight, stripped, are gifts worn down. Still I hold fast and climb sure through your eyes. Who waits for me away from the ravaged nests? The scenes of violence, any searching will easily find the broken twigs, the tufts of feather and hair, the spilled now drying. Did you spring a light swift away unharmed? So many lies we leave be, the sweet feeding to make us strong, but the rows are unmoving, and we journey without a step. What I dare you to lose, I surrendered long ago. But what I beg you to find, must I then lose? In these rows there are tales for every line, every broken smile. Draw close then, and dry these tears, for I have a story to tell. The Unwitnessed, Fisher Kel'tath.
These soldiers.
The two words hung in her mind like meat from butcher hooks. They twisted slowly, aimlessly. They dripped, but the drips had begun to slow. Lying on her side atop the packs of wrapped food, Badal could let her head sink down on one side and see the rough trail stretching away behind them. Not much was being left behind now, barring the bodies, and beneath the light of the jade strangers those pale shapes looked like toppled statues of marble lining a long-abandoned road. Things with their stories gone, their histories forever lost. When she tired of that view, she could set her gaze the opposite way, looking ahead, and from her vantage point the column was like a swollen worm with thousands of heads upon its elongated back, each one of them slave to the same crawling body. Every now and then the worm cast off a part of it that had died, and these pieces were pushed out to the sides. Hands would reach down from those walking past, collecting up fragments of clothing which would be used during the day, stitched together to make flies, gifts of shade from the dead, and by the time those discarded pieces came close to her, why, they'd be mostly naked, and they'd have become marble statues.
Because when things fail, you topple the statues.
Directly before her, the bared backs of the haulers glistened with precious sweat as they strained in their yokes, and the thick ropes twisted as they went taut and gusted out breaths of glittering dust all down their length.
They call these soldiers heavies, some of them anyway, the ones who don't stop, who don't fall down, who don't die, the ones who scare the others and make them keep going until they fall over dead. Heavies. These soldiers?
She thought back. The sun had been spilling out along the horizon. The day was going away. And it had been a day when no one had spoken, when the snake had been silent. She had been walking 3 paces behind Rut, and Rut walked hunched over around Held, who was huddled in his arms, and Held's eyes were closed against the glare. But then they were always closed, because so much in the world was too hard to look at. This would be their last night. They knew it. The whole snake knew it. Badal had said nothing to change their minds. Perhaps she too had given up. It was hard to know for certain. Defiance could hold its shape, even when it was made of nothing but cinders and ash. Anger could look hot to the touch, when in truth it was lifeless and cold. In this way the world could deceive. It could lie, and in lying it invited delusion. It invited the idea that what it was true. In this way, the world could make belief a fatal illness. She stared down at the backs of the heavies and remembered more. Rut's steps wavered, halted, his voice cracked as it made a wordless sound, and then it cracked a second time, and he said,
"Badal, the flies are walking now."
She looked down at her legs, to see if they could take her up alongside him. And slowly, agonizingly, they did. And far ahead, to the place where he was looking with his blinded, closed-up eyes, she saw swarming shapes, black as they came out of the sunset's red glare, black and seething, flies walking on 2 legs, one clump, then another and another, emerging from the bloodlight.
"The flies," said Rut, "are walking."
But she had sent them away, her last command of power, the one that used her up. And now, this day, she had been blowing nothing but air from her lips. Badal squinted.
"I want to be blind again, Badal."
She studied the puffed masses filling his sockets.
"You still are, Rut. Then they are in my head. The flies in my head. No, I see them too. But that seething, it is just the sun's light behind them. Rut, they are people."
He almost fell then, but widened his stance, and with terrible grace he straightened.
"Fathers! No, yes, no. Did we turn round, Badal? Did we somehow turn round? No, see the west. We have walked into the sun every day, every dusk."
She was silent then. The snake was coiling up behind the 2 of them, its scrawny body of bones drawing together, as if that could keep it safe. The figures from the sunset were coming closer.
"But there are children. What is that?"